It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch, and on Robin Hood Radio. And last week, Arthur asked for questions, and guess what happened?
We got them. I was very gratified that we had such a nice response to my solicitation of questions, because I do feel that's my forte, is answering people's questions. I did it for so many years. As I mentioned last week, I started a column at Newsday in the 1970s, early 70s, when I went to work there, called Feedback. And because I was answering questions, I learned a huge amount. These questions, fortunately, except for a couple, didn't really require me to do research. I'm going to start. Let me say, I'm still open to questions. Week two. We may not get to all the ones that I got this week, but we will eventually. So let me do the easy one first. I was corrected. Stand corrected. I have been saying this website is called Smitten Kitten. Well, it's Smitten Kitchen, of course. KITCHEN. And the fact is, I've never been to the website, but the recipes developed on this website are all over the place. And I don't know, what was it that I came across the other day? In any case, it's Smitten Kitchen, not Kitten. I don't know where I got that from. Now, here's somebody wants me to reminisce, which I do well, but I'm not going to do that today. But be prepared for some Jewish reminiscing, of recipe reminiscing. Then we have, now this question really got me thinking. This is from Amy Squires, and Amy has taken my advice in the past. She went out and bought a Bennington loaf pan, which I said I loved, my Bennington pottery loaf pan. And it's ceramic, it's pottery, I use it a lot. For one reason, it's really attractive. So I went online, and you can still buy. I bought my Bennington loaf pan, I'm not exaggerating, 50 years ago, because I haven't been to Bennington in 50 years. No, that's not true. I was there recently, but I know what I bought recently. Anyway, the loaf pan is $42, and you can buy it online. It comes in many colors. It's that speckled, like the traditional speckled enamelware, and it comes in different colored speckles. Mine's yellow. The other thing that Amy loved, a kitchen tool that I mentioned, is what she called a Danish flat whisk. I always call it a Swedish flat whisk. So I looked this up. In fact, it's interchangeable. But there are two different kinds of, let's call it Scandinavian flat whisk. And the one that I have is the one that's coiled wire, as opposed to one that's bands of metal. If you go online to order one of these things, it shouldn't cost more than a few dollars. Mine cost nothing practically. I mean, maybe it was $3 or $4, and I've been using it for 20 years. So I use it a lot. I prefer it to a whisk, you know, the traditional French whisk, for a lot of things, including scrambled eggs. And the other thing, what was the other thing that she liked? Oh, I swear by this. It's, and I've mentioned it many times because I'm always talking about making broth. For skimming broth, I guess skimming other things too, but I don't skim much else. Mine is a square. It's not square because a part of it is curved, and it's a strainer that you use to skim. And it's mine anyway, and I've seen others in stores. Mine actually has a curved front so that when you go to the edge of the pot, which is where the scummy stuff collects, it goes right to the edge of the pot. Very good. So she wanted to know, Amy did, what other tools do I have that I swear by or love? And I'll tell you one item that I swear by that I never see in America, so I've collected it from many trips, wooden forks. I find wooden forks invaluable, just as invaluable as wooden spoons. And as I said, I never see them in the States, but I have collected more than my share in many travels. So obviously in other cultures they like wooden forks. We all like wooden spoons, don't we? And the one thing that I have that I like is not a spoon, but a wooden, flat-edged, I got to call it a spatula, a wooden spatula with a flat edge on the bottom, not a spoon. And I use this a lot when I'm making anything with ground meat. You know, when you put your ground beef in the pot to make chili or to make maybe the base of a cottage pie, shepherd's pie, or bolognese or meat sauce, it's nice to have that flat edge to chop up the meat in the pot as it's browning or at least cooking. And it also is great for scraping up the fond, the residue at the bottom of a pot after you've fried something. Very good. Another thing that I swear by is my spider. I have to laugh about this because my little nieces, my great nieces, love the spider, mainly because it's called a spider. But I bought mine for just a few bucks in Chinatown. It has a bamboo handle. It has a golden metallic. I don't know if it's brass or what. It's not copper, though. A brass spider. It's a web of wire. And it's great for taking pasta out of the pot. Not spaghetti. It doesn't work for spaghetti. But any kind of macaroni. And I one reason I like it is when you take the macaroni out of your cooking water, it drains very well, but if you're cooking a tubular pasta, also you retain a little bit of that water, and then you don't have to bother adding pasta cooking water later. But I like it a lot for retrieving pasta and other things that are boiling. The other thing that I swear by is a universal pot cover. Now, a universal pot cover comes in many different styles. You look this up online. And mine, I got a really good one. Kuhn, K-U-H-N, the German company. And I got mine, this particular one. I do have skillets that I sometimes want to cover, and I don't always have a cover that's going to fit the skillet until I got this, because this will even go over a 14-inch skillet. So let's say you're making a chicken sauté and you want to cover it for a while, you have a cover. But the chief reason I bought this one is that it has a handle that I could hold on to. And I learned this in Italy from home cooks. They know things that we don't know always. That a pot cover is a very handy thing to have if you're flipping a frittata, or flipping anything for that matter. But I do make frittatas fairly frequently. And you can slide your frittata cooked on the bottom onto this cover while you're holding it with a good handle, a good grip, and then you can flip it over back into the pan. If you have a big pot cover, it does the same thing, but I don't have a big pot cover to cover a 14 or 12-inch skillet. So that was the answer to Amy. But now here's a question that I think sort of anybody who entertains has these days. You invite a bunch of people over, even your family, and this one only eats this, and that one only eats that, and this one doesn't eat this, and that one doesn't eat that, and you've got to accommodate all these people. This is a new thing. When I was a kid, and I'm sure when you were a kid, Jill, and everybody listening who's anywhere near my age, we were told if you go to somebody's house for dinner, you just eat what they put in front of you. And you don't argue or quibble. I mean, maybe you have to push your food around. Or if you're allergic, that's another story. But I'm going to give you an example of my neighbor who is gluten-free. Now, why is she gluten-free? She can't answer that question. She just decided some years ago to be gluten-free, so now she's gluten-free. She has a grandson. This happened just a week or two ago. Her several grandchildren were coming. Her daughter and son-in-law were coming, and a grandson who's not the son of the daughter, who's visiting from Israel, and he's studying in Israel. Anyway, so, and on top of all the different eating habits these people have, they're kosher. So she wanted to know, what could she make for vegetarians, gluten-free, but also a carnivore? So I thought the carnivore was the easiest, just roasted chicken. Give the kid chicken. Whatever side dishes he wants to eat, let him eat. The side dishes have to appeal to everybody, but I don't know. She promised a New Orleans... Oh, by the way, this is... Who is sending me this? Jan Phillips. Jan, you promised a New Orleans-inspired buffet, but you didn't have it planned out when you said that. You were waiting for me. So the only thing I could think of that suits everybody here, she mentions that some of the dishes have to be without meat, including red meat, including pork. But she didn't say anything about chicken. So the first thing that came to mind is a good Creole chicken gumbo. I love gumbo of any kind. And I happen to have a really good recipe for gumbo, very basic, but it works. I've made it many times. And it's in Soup Suppers, which we mentioned last week, my best-selling book, paperback. It's still in print. So I have several gumbo ideas here, and one of them is for chicken gumbo. And chicken gumbo follows the same pattern as all gumbos. The first thing you do is make a roux, R-O-U-X, which is flour and a fat cooked together until the flour browns. This takes quite a while. You want to do it over no more than medium heat, and it could take a good hour to make the roux. I went to New Orleans just a few years ago, and I didn't know this existed, but if you go into groceries, I always go to groceries when I travel just to see what's on the shelf and in the produce department. They sell already made roux in New Orleans. You can go to a grocery and buy a jar of roux. This saves you an hour of cooking time. So a roux takes time. So for my gumbo, you need a very big pot because this serves about 8 people and you want to cook a whole chicken. I giggled this morning when I read my own recipe because it calls for a 3 to 4 pound chicken. And as I've been saying, no chickens are 3 pounds anymore. They're all about 4 pounds or more. But whatever size chicken, and by the way, it doesn't have to be a whole chicken. You can use parts, like 4 pounds of parts, whatever parts you like. We like dark meat, so I would do drumsticks and thighs. If you like breasts, do breasts with it. But you should put some thighs in there, I got to say. They add flavor. So what your first thing you do is you brown the chicken. So a couple of tablespoons of oil, vegetable oil, not olive oil, in a skillet, in a deep pot, because you want to use one pot for the whole thing. So in a deep pot, like an 8-quart pot, you want to brown your chicken on the skin side, and then when it's brown on the skin side, flip it over and just for another minute or two, cook it on the underside, and then remove it to a platter. You can cover it if you want. It's not really, I tell you to cover it, but it's not really necessary. So into the fat that's in that pan now, which is a mixture of a couple tablespoons of vegetable oil and quite a bit of chicken fat that's rendered, which is going to give your gumbo great flavor, add a half a cup of flour, and that's your roux. Stir it around, cook it over medium heat, keep an eye on it. You don't want it to burn. So stir it every once in a while. And then, while that's working, you can chop up your vegetables. I do this, I chop up my vegetables right next to the stove, so when the roux is ready, I can just dump them in. The vegetables are 2 medium onions, that's 2 5-6-ounce onions, each onion, and finely chopped. It's going to come out to about 2 cups of chopped onion. 4 large celery ribs, large ones, the outside nice green fat ribs. Finely chop those. You also need about 2 cups of celery. And then 1 large green pepper. This is called the Cajun or Creole Trinity. Instead of carrots, they use bell peppers. So it's onions, celery, and one large bell pepper should, you know, chopped up, should, or diced, I would rather, nice dice. It only comes to a little bit more than a cup. 4 cloves of garlic, and I'll get to the rest in a minute. So as soon as the roux turns a nice dark brown, add all the vegetables, which will immediately stop the cooking, and even get a little thickish. Cover the pot, let it steam the vegetables for, I don't know, 2-3 minutes is all. Open the pot, stir again, add your crushed garlic cloves, 4 large cloves of garlic crushed, and then a 28-ounce can, and stir that around for a minute or two, and then add a 28-ounce can of plum tomatoes. Now, I cut up my tomatoes. You can crush them with your hand if you like, but use the whole can, all the liquid in the can, 28-ounce can of, that's the big can of plum tomatoes, and then your broth. Either, if you're only using canned or boxed broth, I would say use 1 box of broth, 4 cups of broth, and then add 4 cups of water. I mean, you only need a light broth here. The seasonings are thyme, about, I use dried thyme, 1 1/4, 1 1/2 teaspoons of dried thyme. You know, it depends on how recently I've opened up the jar of thyme. If you have thyme on your shelf for quite a long time, it does fade, and so you can use a little bit more. And then you're going to add some Worcestershire sauce, about a tablespoon, a sloppy tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, a couple of large bay leaves. You're putting this all in the pot with the broth, with the tomatoes, the vegetables that have been cooked with the roux. And then, depending on how you like your food, you can put in a couple of shots of a big pinch of cayenne pepper or a couple of shots of Tabasco sauce. And that's it. Put the chicken back and bring that all to a simmer. Put the chicken back in, cover the pot, maybe not even cover the pot, you'll decide, and simmer the chicken for about another half hour, 20 minutes sometimes. And then I would let it sit, turn off the heat, and let it sit. And in fact, this is very good, made the day before, so if you're doing it as a party, as this woman is, you can make it the day before, and then just reheat it, easy. And you serve that with rice, and that's not going to satisfy all her dietary needs. So I'm suggesting something, you know, we almost had $10 guacamole if the tariffs had gone through. But even so, I have to say I was in the supermarket just the other day, and avocados have already increased in price, as they always do before Super Bowl. Don't you know the avocado growers know that you're going to make guacamole for Super Bowl? This is a Super Bowl party with a Cajun theme. I don't think Louisiana is playing either, are they? Does anybody know? Well, nobody knows. Anyway, dip is a big deal on Super Bowl because people, it's a buffet. People just get up and eat. And so if you have a big pot of gumbo, I would also, for New Orleans, make a Creole remoulade. I make Creole remoulade to serve with shrimp. And you can. I would say boil up a whole big batch of shrimp. You didn't tell me how many of which dietary persuasion these people are, but sort of anybody who eats shrimp, except for people who don't eat seafood. But the remoulade, and I'll give you a recipe in a minute, is great on shrimp, but it's also great as a dunker for vegetables. Red peppers, yellow peppers, orange peppers, carrots, celery, fennel. I love fennel as a dipper. I also like endive as a dipper. So you could, for those people who are being low carb, your invitees, you can have vegetables. And for those who eat carbs, you can have various kinds of chips. And you can make a lot of different dips. The Creole one would be the remoulade. You could also make traditional guacamole. And I happen to like, as a dunker, not just as a dressing, ranch dressing, but I never buy ranch dressing. In fact, I'm not even sure I know what ranch Hidden Valley was the inventor of ranch dressing. I keep meaning to buy a bottle of Hidden Valley ranch to see what it tastes like. But my ranch dressing is one-third mayonnaise, one-third yogurt, a Greek yogurt, one-third, or maybe a little more to make it runnier, one-third, buttermilk. And you stir those three things together, and then you add grated garlic. A couple of large cloves of garlic is enough for one and a half cups, two large cloves of garlic, a lot of chopped fresh dill, and a lot of chopped fresh parsley. And, I don't know, sometimes I put in a couple of shots of Worcestershire sauce to that, too. Salt and pepper, if you need it. I don't put hot pepper in that, and it's delicious. And we like to eat it just on a wedge of lettuce. But, you know, it's a very good dip. I do that, too, sometimes. Now, other dips that I love and that I think would be good for a party are not necessarily Creole, but I do love something called tarator. Now, if you go to a Middle Eastern restaurant, sometimes they'll have it on the menu. And my favorite Turkish restaurant has it on the menu, and it's the best. So I want now, sadly, Taji, who owned this restaurant and gave me the recipe, has passed away. But his son continues to operate the restaurant. It's called Taji's, T-A-C-I, Beyti, B-E-Y-T-I. And Taji's Beyti makes a tarator with, it's basically Greek yogurt, or labne, mixed with a little, I would say, three parts labne to one part sour cream to add a little extra creaminess. And then a couple of spoonfuls of tahini and one small clove of garlic. So I would say two tablespoons, runny tablespoons of tahini. You mix that all together. Now, tarator is sometimes made with walnuts, too. It's basically yogurt and walnuts, or yogurt and sesame paste. But whatever you do, you can serve it with pizza chips. You can serve it with, I'm not sure corn chips go on this, but that could be on the table for the guacamole. There are all kinds of healthy crackers out there that you can put out. And the other dip that I love is tzatziki, which is yogurt with cucumber, always a little garlic. And in this case, I use mint as the herb. So I don't know, if you have a Creole gumbo, shrimp for dipping into remoulade or anything, Russian dressing, ranch dressing would be good on shrimp. And then you have all these dips and chips. I'm not sure what else I could recommend for this strange group. So the other thing, another question is, an interesting question, I thought. This is from Bruce Berg, who wanted to know why his chicken thighs, he loves chicken thighs, I love chicken thighs, aren't tender. Now, he says, and he's correct, that they should be cooked to 165 degrees internal temperature. And you can use your hope you have an instant read thermometer. I could add that to my useful gadgets list. Although I don't think it's always so accurate, as neither does Bruce, by the way. So 165 is the safe temperature for chicken. However, if you really want it to be at its optimal tenderness, you have to cook it a little longer. Now, I've never taken the temperature of a chicken thigh. Unfortunately for me, Bruce cooks on a Weber kettle, on a barbecue grill, and it's very different, and the timing is very different. And I'm not sure why his thighs are coming out tough, but my first advice is the chicken itself. I play with brands of chicken. I always go back to Smart Chicken, which is a branded chicken, because it has a good, I think, balance of flavor and tenderness. It's not the most tender by a long shot. It's not the most flavorful by a long shot, but it's good on both counts. And I'm not so sensitive to tough chicken. I have eaten tough chicken in my life. I know what a tough... you go to Italy and you get a chicken, it's tough. And a lot of our chickens have become tough. The more they run around, the tougher they're going to get. So if you want a free-roaming chicken, you have to count on it being a little chewier than Purdue. Purdue is super tender, and if that's your standard, you're not going to meet it with any other chicken, except for maybe Tyson, you know, the other mega chicken producer. But my method is in the oven, so it's hard for me to tell you how to cook them on the grill. My suspicion is that Bruce is cooking these on a too hot grill. In other words, the protein, the chicken protein, is being shocked by this incredible heat, and that when protein gets exposed to incredible heat, the proteins tighten up, and it gets tough. It's the same with meat, not just chicken. So I don't know, Bruce. I think you have to investigate the chicken you're cooking more than your method, because I bet you're cooking it just fine. Maybe keep that heat down. The Webers these days have thermometers on the cover, so you can tell what the temperature is. And my temperature is high. I cook chicken, when I'm roasting chicken, I cook it 450 in a very well preheated oven, and a whole chicken, spatchcock, meaning butterflied, on a sheet pan or on a rack, takes 45 minutes. I find chicken thighs alone, 40 minutes is usually enough. I do it on the top rack of the oven, 450 degrees. On the top rack, the top gets the most heat. The top of the chicken gets the most heat because heat bounces off the top of the oven. It's intense up there. The middle of the oven is the least intense place. So I put it up there, and it's always good. Now, it depends on the chicken, as I said. And recently, I bought some chicken, I won't mention where I got it from, that Bob really complained about it being tough. To me, it wasn't tough, it was chewy. And it had great flavor, so I didn't mind. But, you know, chicken, is, as I've mentioned many times, has changed over the years, so... don't expect your chicken that you think is, you know, free range and this and that to be as tender as the commercial chicken used to be. And I think that the grill may be the problem itself. Well, I don't know. I even when I had a Weber kettle, I wasn't so good at it. We have many more questions, but I want to remind everybody they can send questions to mmiles@robinhoodradio.com. That's mmiles@robinhoodradio.com. Let's see here. I keep thinking of that Perry Como song. Letters, we get letters. You know, the thing is, I watched it. By the way, that intro to his letters part of the program is on TikTok, probably on YouTube too. But I got enough. Next week, more questions, including the mystery question. No, I have questions here, but keep sending them. I'm enjoying this. mmiles@robinhoodradio.com. So anyway, everybody have a great week.
And we will talk to you next week and see who else has weighed in with what questions. So thank you very much.
Keep the feedback. You can correct me, too. I like being corrected when I'm wrong. Okay, kids.
Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.